All right. We are here. We are Galexis and welcome. Today we speak about wholeness, about oneness. But first we must begin with the lack of wholeness, the lack of oneness, because that is what drives people into their spiritual work. It activates people's yearnings. The soul calls you to become whole. In fact, it is your spiritual path to become whole. You came here into physical reality and deliberately fragmented. You deliberately forgot who you were. You deliberately decided that you were going to create from scratch, that you were going to learn, you were going to discover and learn who you were, and therefore be able to work with the physical plane, learn how to become masters of creation, and expand and grow into your true self, which is divine. And in that divinity, to find oneness and connection to God, Goddess, all that is. To find oneness with your higher self, who knows who you are. You see, when you first came into physical manifestation, your higher self, the one who knew all of who they were, decided to be the one to explore. And the higher self created a whole bunch of lifetimes of which you are one. When you are aware of who you are, when you consciously step into your own personal wholeness, being the reality creator that you are, you will then step into the oneness. You will blend with all the other lifetimes into your higher self. And from there, you go home. You become emerging with God, Goddess, all that is, and your spiritual journey, while it is not complete, except from your worldly perspective, it is a beginning of something that is indescribable, ineffable, beyond understanding, beyond the material, beyond the mental, beyond the emotional. What is higher than the emotion is love. And you may think, well, love is an emotion, but love is actually the vibratory feeling of soul, of your divine spark, of your divine essence. You are love. God is love. The way back to God is for you to love. The way back to God is through love. And the way you do this is consciously becoming whole. But you chose to become fragmented, as we said. And these fragments are pieces of reality that you want to work with, you want to understand, you want to deal with. You don't want to just ignore your pieces, because your job is to take all your pieces and bring them together. You see, in the divine plan, your divine plan, which is the same for all souls and all other lifetimes of your higher self and of perhaps other higher selves, the plan is to explore in each lifetime a number of pieces, and in those pieces to discover how to fully be conscious and loving with each piece. Now, you may think, well, my gosh, that's a lot of pieces. How do I become conscious with all those pieces? Well, we're going to tell you. When you are a child, you're not very awake. Some of you are more awake than others when you were children and were aware of spirits and aware of greater dynamics. The one who channels us was very aware that somehow or another that she had lived eternally, but she didn't know how to express that. And she also was aware that somehow or another the people around her, her family, friends, and so on, were kind of clueless about things. But she saw and she knew, but she couldn't express it. She didn't have the way to express it, nor did she have the power to express it. And so as part of your growing up process, you learn how to gain your power, you learn how to express yourself, you learn how to use your three divine channels of self-expression. One is to learn and know who you are, just to take every circumstance in your life as a learning experience and really learn it. Learn what it means to you. Learn how you respond to it. Learn how to work with it. Learn from it. Learn by it. And in that learning, you know more of yourself, you by your responses and your reactions and how to deal with it. Okay. Another way is through connecting. And that's connecting with other people, connecting with the divine. Touch, love, and heal, we call it. Where you touch others, you allow them to touch you. You can heal others by lifting their vibration. They can heal you by lifting your vibration. There is a shared connection. There's a belonging. There's community. There is love there for you to experience how to love, how to work with relationships, how to build love, how to give love, how to find it, how to savor it, how to utilize it. And then there is the channel of creation, to imagine, to dream, to create, to have ways to make your life better, to move forward towards a future that you are creating more and more consciously. So you've got those three channels of expression. But you're not capable of tapping into them when you're young. So you do the best that you can to survive. When you become an adolescent, you want to belong very much to your peer group. But sometimes you don't feel like you fit in. You don't feel like that you're safe with them, or you're afraid of their judgments. You're afraid of shame and rejection, humiliation. And so you make adjustments to it. That's at the point in your life where your ego really develops. And what happens in your adolescence is that you don't know how to deal with all these different pieces, all these different relationships, all these different circumstances, all the things that you need to know and need to work with. You're not really clear on how to deal with all of that. So basically, you put it in a framework of your self-image. You put it in the framework of your ego. Because otherwise you don't have any boundaries, but you utilize your ego to have boundaries. And here is where a lot of fragmentation is sustained. It is created and sustained by all the challenges and all the intense disruptions in your life that happen between childhood and adolescence. But what you do is that you organize yourself. You perceive yourself. You build a self-image and identity. And you use your ego to do that. You take your ego, which basically says, I am, you know, this person. I am this identity. And I'm comparing myself with everyone else to find out who I am. And that will distinguish me from these other people. If I'm better than, I am more distinguish in a positive way. But to enable me to be specific, to be unique, to be independent of others, I've got to have a contrast between me and others. So this leads to identities such as the rebel, such as the outsider, the outlaw. Identities that you use for survival with other people, the nice guy, the nice gal, the always accommodating person, the sincere, good person, or the brat, or the bully, Whatever it takes for you to create some kind of circumstance where you have a sense of who you are. Admittedly, of course, this is very immature. And then you move into your young adulthood, which is really an extension of adolescence. It's not really truly adult. You have the opportunity to be an adult by the end of your 20s, but through your 20s, you discover the world. You discover what your role in the world is. You play around with that. You try this, you try that. You go here, you go there. There's a lot of adventures if you're fortunate. If not, then you're really, you know, stuck in some kind of groove and you have to adapt to it. You have to figure out how to survive in the world. The 20s are generally that decade. And in the process of that, you hone your ego, you hone your self-image, and you add a whole element of fantasy to it. Because your scope now isn't just your peer group at school or wherever. Your scope now is the world. Your scope is your culture. You have a cultural identity. You know, you have your gender identity. And this time of gender fluidity, you have your identity, whether you're gay or straight, whether you're a sexy woman, a sexy guy, whether you're heterosexual, whether you are, and you continue it, whether you're a geek or a nerd or a sex pot or a stud or whatever it is. You figure that out as part of your image. And then you also have in your adolescent, young adulthood, you have your cultural identities as part of your race, a part of your religion or philosophy of your culture, a part of your understanding of whatever institution that you identify with. You have that as well. And you work with your identity, in a sense, to try and move up to the top, ascend in levels to the top of whatever it is. You're trying to rise, you're trying to ascend, you're trying to become more. Because your dream when you're in your young adult self is to be more. Your dream is to shine. Your dream is to be loved. And you'll do whatever you need to do to emphasize that, to encourage that. But again, there's all sorts of issues that come up. There's issues in relationships, getting married or divorced, having relationships fail, being rejected. If you have children, what all that changes your life. Everything changes piece by piece. And all of these pieces sometimes seem to be too much. Sometimes they seem to be overwhelming. Sometimes they seem to be confusing, and you just don't know how to deal with them. So you kind of stuff all the issues back as far back as you can in your psyche, and you look at it this way. You know, in your culture, you have allopathic medicine. The channel calls it corporate medicine. It's the medicine that is legally allowed, where you go to a doctor and a doctor prescribes a drug for you or a protocol such as surgery or whatever it is. The whole object of allopathic medicine, and that's why its term is allopathic, which means against the body, but it's against the symptoms. Allopathic medicine is about reducing the symptoms, the discomfort of the symptoms. It's not about the cause. And generally, medicine says, oh, the cause of diabetes is high blood sugar. Well, they don't go into, well, why do you have high blood sugar? Well, it might be because you're obese. Well, why are you obese? Well, it's because, you know, your insulin isn't right. You see, they keep going in little circles to describe what the causes are. But the cause may be emotional. It may be spiritual. It may be in assumptions, and it may be in your diet. It may be in your lifestyle. It may be who you hang out with. It may be a program or that you figured out. It may be even a karmic contract for you to have that circumstance and to deal with it. So medicine, standard medicine, doesn't go and look at that. So it affects only the symptoms. Well, when you are growing up, when you are in your childhood, adolescent, or young adulthood, you don't know how to find the cause. So what you do is you try to ignore all the pieces and try to reduce the symptoms. You try to do that, and then you kind of put an overview on it, which is your self-image or your self-identity, and you try to function like that. And yes, you can continue to grow in spiritual ways. You can continue to make progress in your life. You can make more money. You can find more, information. You can find more truth. You can make progress. You can move. You can do new things. You can whatever. But a lot of pieces get left behind. And when it comes time for you to make decisions, choices that will affect your life, if you are fragmented, if you're just trying to reduce the symptoms and you're not dealing with all the pieces, you're missing a lot of the communication of yourself. You're missing the communication of all those internal pieces, the messages, the healing potential of every one of those things, every one of those events, patterns, people. In relationships, every one of those identities that you've had, every one of those changes that you've made, everything that has gone down has a message for you. And it holds a certain worldview, the worldview that you had at that time. So even though you expand your worldview consciously in your external self and your ego seems to stretch a bit with it, parts of you no longer are being heard. So when it comes to make a decision, who do you listen to? If you don't listen to your parts, if you don't hear what all of these pieces are saying, then you're at risk. You're vulnerable to the media, social media, to educational ideas, people who think they know a lot who will share, and then you'll say, yeah, well, I think, okay, I'll go along with that protocol, I'll go along with that philosophy, I'll try that. Or that you make the decisions basically on what you think is the logical choice to make, or the one you think you should be making, the one that you make according to your assumptions about what life is about and all those beliefs, which are also pieces. But which beliefs do you prioritize? Those beliefs are the ones that you use in your decision making. What assumptions have you made? They may or may not be true. But there may be primary assumptions that you use for your decision making, but the secondary assumptions, some of which may be true, are ignored. Some of the beliefs are ignored. Some of the thoughts that you've had, the gut-level knowing. At times when you are fragmented, when you don't have all the pieces working with you, when your gut-level knowing comes up and says, hey, that. You say, but that doesn't fit into the logic. That's so odd. That's kind of off the wall. I'm not going to pay any attention to that. I've got to do it the right way, according to the culture, according to the institution, according to my mentors, according to my religion, according to my path. I'm going to have to do it that way. And come on now, gut, be quiet. Well, we've got to get focused here. And so in a way, you bully from a conscious mind perspective, from certain aspects of yourself, certain pieces, certain beliefs, certain parts of yourself, then bully the rest of it and say, okay, we're going to do this because this is what others say. This is what the collective says. This is what has been traditioned for thousands of years or hundreds of years, or this has been discovered by science, so they must know everything. Whatever it is, wherever you put the authority, it still doesn't acknowledge those pieces, all of those pieces. And the fact is that every one of these pieces, even like an unfinished business in a relationship, an unfinished relationship that hasn't been fully processed, even a contract. Sometimes you have a psychic contract with someone, a karmic contract. Maybe that's not even been done yet, been cleared. Maybe you don't even know about it. But if you don't know about it, you can't hear the message. You don't hear the authority of that piece, the wisdom of that piece. And you haven't integrated it into you. So you remain fragmented and let a few pieces drive the rest of you. You know, one of the things that the channel discovered when she was joined groups back in her 20s and 30s is that in most groups, there were people who would gravitate to the top as leaders. And there would be a strong leader. And then there would be some other people that were also kind of strong and leader, but they would kind of bicker and fight with the leader. And then there's a whole bunch of followers who would just do whatever. And then there were a whole bunch of followers who spent all their time bitching and complaining about the leaders. And she thought, well, how does this work? You know, we're not really, we don't have any harmony in here. Everybody's gathering, but everybody has these assumptions about what should be. And there's all this griping and all the followers are saying, well, I guess I don't know very well, so I'll just follow. And then there's the leaders fighting for their sense of order, fighting for control. So the channel found groups kind of not fun to be part of. So she said, okay, I don't seem to fit in any of these because I'd like to attend, I'd like to participate. I may not want to be a leader, but I don't really want to just blindly follow, and then I don't want to bitch and complain. So where do I belong? There's no place for me in this group. So she basically swore off groups, which, again, if you get into any kind of black and white choice, this is a sure indicator that you're missing some piece of yourself. Any extreme, yes or no, this is the way it is. This is the way it isn't. All of that essentially denies the whispers and the messages and the nuances and the contexts of parts of yourself. And you use the dominant identity that is organized and corralled and held by your ego to lead. And that's what most people think of when they think of me. Who am I? I'm this. And it carries all of these bases, many of which are absolutely untapped, quiet, abandoned. Now, you see, you are a microcosm of the macrocosm. And you came here to work in your life on the micro level, to learn as an individual how to function, how to work your own magic, how to manifest your life, how to put together what you want to put together, how to put it all together, how to respond, how to react, how to take action. And you came to learn that. That's the micro level. That's you, the individual. And you, the individual, can be fragmented, as we say, and you're not whole. you create this reality. In other words, this reality that you're in is completely and precisely set up exactly just for you in every single way. Everything that happens in your life, everything, down to the tiniest detail, and we'd say tiny detail, it's the pattern of an insect flying around in your room after it's come in your window. Every detail is created by you. Now, not consciously the micro you, but we would say there's a macro level. The macro you, in conjunction with your guides, your spiritual team, have worked all of this out. Before you came here, worked out the broad strokes of your life, giving you plenty of room to play, to discover, to put the pieces together however you wanted to. But if you get very focused in your ego, and unfortunately when you allow your ego to determine your identity and who you are, it becomes negative. It's a negative ego. It's not supposed to do that. Your ego is not supposed to function that way. When you give your power over to the ego, you lose a lot of voices inside you. You lose a lot of feedback. You lose a lot of yourself. Okay? Now, when that happens, when you lose yourself, you remain fragmented, and you don't even know sometimes that you're fragmented. But when you're fragmented, you cannot be fully happy. You cannot be fulfilled. You cannot be joyous. You cannot be celebratory. You cannot have a life of fulfillment. You can't have that until all of you is working together. Now, on the macro level, if you look at your reality that's around you on the macro level, you have the institutions, your society and its institutions, you have the cultures, you have the plants, the animals, the other people, you have all the different cultures, you have all the different atmosphere, the weather, you have the whole world. This is yours. This belongs to you. You belong here. Even though, dear one, you've come from another place, you've come from another planetary system, you came specifically to Earth because it is so full and rich of all creative options. But it also means that you have lots and lots of pieces because you have lots of different experiences, a lot of diversity of experiences. And if you don't have diversity of experiences, somehow or another, your reality is going to be turned over, upside down, and turned around so that you can. You just can't go along in a rut and think that you're going to be fine and happy and it's all secure and safe and nice and we'll just stay in this nice little rut and everything will be okay. You did not choose before you came here to stay micro. You chose to start micro, to work with your individual components of yourself. But then, for you to dream and imagine more and work then with the whole world as you. This is the Aquarian age concept of the group, but individuality being sustained within the group. When you leave this physical plane for the last time, you're done with incarnations. You merge into your higher self. And then you merge into the oneness. Now, this is the divine oneness. It's a place of intense bliss. Awesome bliss. Some people every now and then have a very amazing experience of being there for a second or two. This changes their life. This is the eureka moment of their lives. To have a touch beyond. But it's so big, when it comes back, they don't know exactly what to do with that experience. Some people then find their mission on the planet. But others are just like, oh, I don't know what to do. This is overwhelming. I look at the world and I'm like looking at this oneness and love, and I don't want to be in the world. This world is filled with all sorts of hate and despair and stress and scarcity and issue. But you see, dear one, when you put yourself in wholeness, when you put yourself in harmony, you will then be creating a new world. And now that you've gone through the great shift, that period of time between August 2017 and March 2019, this huge period in which everything has shifted on pretty much every level, yes, you can continue as before, but really, you don't want to. You didn't come to be the same all through your life. That's boring. You came to become whole as your own personal, unique, your micro spiritual journey, your spiritual path is becoming whole. And when you do, your world begins to heal. The pieces of the world begin to function better in harmony, because you have expanded. You are expanded. You're a power. You're a magnificence. You are an exalted, luminous being. You have expanded your point of view. And then you are able to see your place in the world. And the world then becomes part of your pieces. And you can heal the pieces of disturbance in the world. So, how do you go about this? Your journey, of course, then, is to become whole. Now, first of all, you've got to identify some of your pieces. Now, some pieces are very loud and they want your attention very strongly. Other pieces are very shy. They're in the shadows, not so easy. Since a lot of the pieces are associated with very profound emotional pain and suffering, you've ignored them, maybe escaped from them, maybe run away, or maybe, you know, took medications or drugs or something to escape. Somewhere along the way, you had to leave, had to get away from the pain. But if you want to bring everything back into wholeness, then you have to go look at it. You have to acknowledge that it's there. And most people are totally gun-shy, as they say. They're just very scared. Oh, no, it's too painful. I don't want to go there. But you see, if you hold the correct perspective, it really isn't. Because if you realize that your functional level of consciousness, your awareness, whatever level of awareness you have, if you're aware of your old pain from that old unfinished relationship or that horrible, difficult situation that never seems to have been resolved, you will find that your perspective gives you some distance between it, and then you can listen to it. See, sometimes you can't really get all the messages and the wisdoms in the immediate experience. Sometimes it takes a few years to gather the wisdom and say, oh, that's what I learned. That's what I need to remember. That's what changed my life in that particular way and led me in a better way. Oh, I get it. And these parents that I got, and these siblings, and these family members, Man, I had so much trouble with them. Oh my gosh, it was painful. And for those of you whose parents are still alive, you're saying, well, you know, it's still difficult dealing with them. Every time I go there, it's tense, and we go back to the old patterns. But you see, when your focus and your awareness has risen enough, you then acknowledge, you can see that from a spiritual perspective, how much you learned that was positive from your parents, as well as what was negative. You learned who not to be, yes, but you also, in a sense, got in the back and forth with that, began to find what was important to you and where you needed to go. An example is the channel, and when she was young, her mother was just a very highly, very religious person, pushed religion down her throat all the time to be, you know, a good church girl, be a really, really good Christian girl, and do all the right things and serve others and serve God and read her Bible and all that kind of stuff. Well, she saw right through it. There was a hypocrisy there. She saw hypocrisy at the church when she was age 5, and she made a decision at age 5, church is not for me. Well, when you're 5, you don't have much power, right? So she still was forced to go to every Sunday sermon and most Wednesday night prayer meetings. And if she was even sick, she didn't get a break because there was a local pastor that did a Sunday sermon on the radio, and she was forced to listen to that. What did that do? It was, at first, it was debilitating. It made her so angry. It made her separate more and more, even from her mother. She hated it. She resented it. Plus, she was a tomboy, and she had to wear comfortable, uncomfortable clothes to church. She hated wearing heels. She hated wearing hose. She hated wearing, and in those days, this was like 50s, she hated wearing girdles. They put girdles on. Oh my gosh. They didn't have pantyhose. There were girdles, and they had little clasps, and then the hose had to be fastened in the clasp. And bras and were tight, and all the clothes were tight, and sometimes she had to wear hats. She hated that too. So she had to be part of this whole cultural phenomenon. And she looked at in the early days, you had to wear gloves. The girls had to wear little gloves. And she couldn't move her hands. Her fingers were all stuck in the gloves. She couldn't move her gloves. So she was like feeling imprisoned, and she was resenting it. Well, guess what happens as soon as she's old enough? She splits out of there, and she gets metaphysical. She finds her path, much to the chagrin of her mother, who's like freaked out that she's gone to the devil now, and so on. But nevertheless, the point is that she was such an easygoing kid most of the time, except for this. And in fact, her mother basically pushed her to find her true path. She would never have thought to have gone metaphysical if her mother said, oh, you don't want to go to church, no problem. She would never have left that Lebanon, Tennessee community. Little town. Everybody knows everybody else's business. She would have probably done art and exhibited at art shows, and she played the violin, so she'd continued to play in the symphony, and she would have married a nice guy and continued to play in the symphony and put on art shows and had a couple of babies and whatever. It would have been that life. But a decision When you make big decisions, your life is totally changed from that moment on. But sometimes you need to heal and resolve what it was, even though it was a good thing ultimately for you, you have to heal it. You have to heal your younger selves. When you were a child, you went through trauma experiences. Not just physical trauma, but you had emotional trauma, fears, exclusions. Maybe one time you made a bad grade and your parents were so disappointed. Whatever it was, maybe it didn't appear large to other people, but to you it was a mark. It was a heavy circumstance, a situation, and you didn't know how to process it. You didn't know how to resolve it. Your crush on somebody in adolescence, and then it never amounts to anything, or you even get rejected. How do you process that when you don't know how to process? All right, so those are pieces that remain. That's why there's such a big business in psychology for helping people heal and process all their emotional past and deal with it and come to terms with it and re-energize themselves and figure out their new beliefs and their new ways of being and their new choices and their new decisions and to get to a process. Now, yeah, it takes a lot of time. And we would recommend that for some of the major pieces that seem to be in pain, you might want to do that. You might want to go and process it. But the key here to becoming whole is not that you process every part down to the last degree. And we've known people who process way too much because they keep thinking this idea. There's this idea that in your culture, that to have a great life, you got to just get rid of all the problems and the obstacles first. But of course, as soon as you start focusing on problems and obstacles, there are layers and layers and layers and layers, and it goes on infinitely. There, you know, it's like you peel off all the layers of the onion. Is there really an onion, or is it just layers? Because you never get done unless you know how to. But the point we're making here is this, is that if you hold a perspective of the whole, you can see that some of these pieces in there are at war with each other. They're in conflict. They believe different things. They want to do different things. They hold different perceptions of themselves. They're in conflict. Now the channel goes to an energy healer who finds conflicts in the body. And he calls it sibling rivalry. It's like there are two parts of the body that are just, we don't like each other. And they have a reactivity and a pushing away of each other. Now this is on an energetic level. And whether that concept applies everywhere or not, there are parts of you that are in conflict with each other. So when you have conflict within yourself, you either ignore it and use your dominant parts to make your decision, or somehow or another you numb out and escape from it, or you push and drive yourself using the slave driver. You push and drive yourself to achieve and stay focused on some kind of track to where you feel if you just keep pushing, eventually you'll get past it. So these are different ways that people have of trying to deal with all the pieces. Now, the object of becoming whole is that you will find yourself in harmony. There is harmony within. The way to find harmony is for you to look in perspective. Because if you were to step into the perspective of your greater self, of your grander self, of your higher self, let's say, and if you were to be in that greater spiritual perspective, not taking anything that happened in your life personally or being engaged and involved and whatever, focused on it, if you just step back, you'll see how every piece has its play. Every piece has its purpose. And how every player in the play, every person, every circumstance, all of the players, all the pieces have their roles, and they're all working for a common good for you. They're all there so that you can learn who you are. That's your spiritual path. So that you can learn to value and love yourself. So you can figure yourself out by knowing yourself, not analyzing, not overthinking, not taking a perspective, a cultural perspective, and looking at you. If you take the cultural perspective and look at you, you're always going to be inadequate, because the cultural perspective is limited. But on a personal level, if you step back and look at your whole life, you'll see how every piece has worked towards helping you be more conscious of you. Every piece, everything. Even if it was painful to go through, even if it was traumatic to go through, it has helped you in some way. You have learned from it. Even if you haven't learned fully maybe from it, you could go in there and extract way more treasures of wisdom. But you've learned. It's helped you move to the place where you are now. And the place where you're going from here in the future is only grander. It's only more expanded, more light, more brilliant, more beautiful. So stepping away from all of those pieces, you see that they are all actually, in their own way, working in harmony for you. Now, you may not feel harmonious at all, but you got to get this perspective. And think of all the relationships you've had. All the people you've met and interacted with. And some of them are like, oh, I don't want to deal with that person anymore. Others, I'd really like to know that person more, but they don't seem to be interested in me. Or whatever it is. All of these pieces, all of these pieces of the puzzles of you. They're all there for you. Every one of them. Now, if you have difficulty getting that perspective, just take in your mind, just imagine in your mind, a family member, someone that you engaged with a lot, that you knew pretty well, still know pretty well. You know their habits. You know how their attitudes about life. You know what they think about life. More or less consistently. That is, if you, you know, at least when you were engaged with them. So, in your mind, just pull up in your mind one of these people that you've known, that you know very, very well. And just kind of step back and look at them. Don't pay attention to what you feel about what they said or what they did with you or whatever. Get away from that. Just look at the person. Just sense the person. And sense that they are filled with all sorts of their own inconsistencies. that they have their own inner conflicts. And you can see the dominant pieces that they use consistently to express their image, their self-image, and their identity. You can see that. It's easy when you have a perspective on someone. You can see they're carrying all this stuff, all these experiences of their lives. And just in your imagination now, just sense. If you don't get anything, you know, a little practice you probably will get, but give yourself permission not to get anything. Give yourself permission to get the wrong thing. Just relax about this, but just get a sense that they're in this bubble. There's this big bubble that surrounds them. It's a kind of a see-through bubble. You can see the edges, though, of it. It's kind of like a, you know, when you blow bubbles, you know, it has a little shimmery quality and it's kind of bouncy and fragile looking, but imagine that there's a little bubble around them, and all inside the bubble are all their pieces. You can see their dark pieces, some light pieces over here. You can see all the people that have made a big difference in their lives and who they worry about, what fears they've got, who they're upset at, what they're angry about, what they feel powerless over, what they want for their lives, that they're maybe not getting it. What are their hopes and dreams? What are they doing about that? Are they paralyzed and overwhelmed? Are they running to escape, dealing with their stuff? How do they deal with their life? What are they presenting? What is their ego facade that they present to you that or to the world about how functional and how well put together they are and how important and significant they may be or not? Just sense that their ego focus. This is what they want you to think about them. But you see around the back of that, don't you? You see that ego facade is just a facade. It's the dominant pieces they put together and said, okay, this is my definition, and this is what I want everybody to see. You can see that in them. And you can see that all these pieces in them, all put together, kind of make up this overall field of resonance, overall vibratory field. When you're with them, there's just a sense of their presence, a sense of their vibration. You can just feel their essence. Okay, now, instead of that person, step back out of you and put you in front and look at you. Come on, try to get a little detachment from you. You know yourself very well, so it's you're closer to you than you are to that family member. So you need to just kind of detach. And you look at yourself with compassion. Why? Everyone deserves to be looked at with compassion. It's not easy being a human being. It's not easy putting all these pieces together, especially when you don't know that that's what you're supposed to be doing, especially when there's fear of pain and fear of suffering. So look at yourself. Look at the facade you put out there, what you want other people to see of you, how you want people to perceive you. What does your ego demonstrate? What is your ego putting out there? And what's behind there? What is the unfinished businesses? What's the conflicts in there? What's your inner child think about things? What does your inner child feel? Is your inner child happy? Lonely? See, when you're fragmented, very often, a lot of this busyness that people get into is to cover up loneliness or sense of isolation, the sense of separation. It's painful. When you're whole, you don't have a sense of separation. You're unified. You have a sense of union. But until you reach that point, you're just a whole bunch of parts and pieces running around. So sense yourself. See those parts and pieces. See those old relationships still hanging in there, the ones that you haven't finished processing. See all the rationales you've made. Oh, I guess, you know, I wanted to do this and it didn't work, so, I guess I'm not supposed to be doing that. I'm supposed to be doing something else. Did you ask your gut level knowing? No, most people say. No, how do you get that? It's those hunches. It's those intuitional hunches. But there's a sense of depth to them. A sense of truth to them. But it comes in a very small voice because it comes from your soul. And you're not used to listening to your soul talk. The soul has a lot of the feminine energy. And unless you've really deliberately practiced paying attention to the feminine within yourself, whether you're a man or a woman, and really listened to the feminine, to the soul, it's easy to dismiss because it's just a very tiny, tiny little voice. It's just a beep, and then it's not there. What would your life be like if you could listen to that and follow your truth? What if you could heal those parts that are in conflict? What if you could bring the parts not just in harmony to work for you, but in harmony with each other as they work for you? What would that do? Okay. That little experience, that's it. You know, maybe you got something, maybe you didn't. But you see, when you heal these pieces, and you can heal them very quickly. Because there really isn't time. You don't have to spend as much time, you know, deconstructing them and processing them as the time has elapsed between that event and now. You don't have to spend all that time. Growth can be rather fast, but you do have a sense of time. So there is, by nature, by the plan, there is a time lag. You don't get all the messages like so. Your ego would like to think so and would tell you so, but you don't. So, how do you heal these pieces? Whether it happened last week, whether it happened 20 years ago or longer ago. How do you heal that? Well, each piece needs to be loved, valued, perhaps forgiven. Perhaps you, the dominant conscious awareness of you, possibly this dominant you, needs to be forgiven too for dominating. But you are a whole. You have this bubble around you. This is the way we perceive it. When we read people's energies in private sessions, we look at them and there's this bubble and we can look at and all these stuff, these things. And when we're asked to look at a particular theme, all the pieces are relative to that theme come bubbling right up. And we can see conflicts and fears and worries and resistances. We can see it in the physical body. Because if you have too much conflict going on in your bubble, in your field of resonance, you're going to have physical symptoms. You're going to have fatigue. You're going to have maybe your brain's not going to work quite right. Your digestion's not going to work quite right. You're not going to maybe be motivated. You may have difficulty with your motivation. You may have difficulty with your imagination, or you may have difficulty following through on things. You may have all sorts of ways of paralyzing yourself when you're time to make choices. You may worry that you make the wrong choice. You may have perfectionism. You may have all sorts of things. But the point is that all of these pieces, if you love them, basically it's like loving you. If you forgive them, it's like forgiving you. If you heal them, i.e. lift their resonance, it's lifting yours. And when you get harmony amongst your pieces, you feel peace. You don't feel fragmented anymore. You feel whole. You don't have any negative mind talk. The mind talk doesn't keep agitating on same things. And if you have a row with somebody or a circumstance with somebody, so in a matter of hours or maybe a day, tops, it's gone, it's over. No more turbulence, no more stress. You see, your physical body was made to respond to stress by mobilizing the fight or flight or freeze mechanism, which is done physically through the HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. They're the ones that put out the hormones, get everything going, and mobilize your limbs to run and to take action. A lot of people just live in this fight, flight, or freeze modality all the time. And then they would have trouble sleeping, trouble digesting, because when you're in that fight or flight, this is not a time for rest. It is not a time to digest. It is not a repair time. It is a time to mobilize to deal with the danger or the threat, whatever it is. And in realistic terms, the way it was originally meant is that, yes, as soon as you deal with that, okay, it's over. And the heart rate will come back down. And you'll go back into your rest and digest mode, which is called the parasympathetic mode. And the fight or flight mode is called the sympathetic nervous system mode. Okay, so you have that. So 90% of your time or more should be in the parasympathetic, the rest and digest and repair mode. But most people in a busy culture who are stressed, even metaphysical people who are trying really hard to do the right thing, can find themselves in this chronic stress state. Why? Because there are pieces in you. If you are one of these people, pieces in you that are in chronic fright, chronic feelings of lack of safety and threat, and basically are sending the signal to your body, as well as your brain, your body, your brain, your mind, that all is not well and you've got to survive. Hurry up, survive. We got to deal with this. We got to deal with this. And you get impatient and you get angry and upset and frustrated. And if you've noticed, that doesn't tend to help. And sometimes in the moment, it's hard to deal with something that's very current. But if you look at your past and you look at where you lost your safety, where the threats were that became then permanently anchored in your body, you can love and forgive those. Now, admittedly, this feels like a lot of work, and it can be. But you can start the process in such a way that you can come to a feeling of wholeness in a matter of moments. And that's what we want to do with you today in the meditation. And just to explain here in the meditation, what we're going to do is that we're going to let you see all these parts and let you interact with them, let you love them, let you heal them, let you lift them. And then you're going to have the overall perspective that all together now, together loving each other, we're going to move into the greater self, and from there into the grander self, and from there into the higher self, which will bring us to the oneness. Because when you've got them all, like, okay, basically you're in the wholeness, you're going to feel so much serenity. You're going to feel so much belonging. You are going to be belonging to yourself. You're not going to feel separate. You're integrated. And then you're going to be able to get messages from yourself and not be so responsive to the messages from the world. That's when, instead of being at the mercy of the world or being at the effect of the world, then you begin radiating and broadcasting your unique signal into the world, and then the world will respond to you. And then you need to have a greater vision, and this is what we'll do in the meditation, a greater vision of you, your world, you in your world, and then your world's potential, your ideal world. Not that that would ever come to be in the material, but it is a vibratory resonance that leads you towards your greatness, towards your majesty, towards your magnificence, towards your awesomeness. And we're not talking ego now here, because you're going to leave the limitations of this ego, which is the limited ego is the negative ego. It's your saboteur. And you're going to be able to work with your positive ego, which is just a servant. It's a minor piece of you. It's like your thoughts. Your mind should be your servant, not your master. Your ego should be your servant, not your master. When you take mastery, when you take the helm, when you step into wholeness, then you are the master. This is not that you're going to bully and dominate. No. But you're going to facilitate the community of your pieces. And when you step far enough back, when you step far enough above, when you expand far enough in your perspective, then you can change the whole world. We're not kidding. Right now, there are parts of the world that really bug you. You don't like. There are people you don't like. There are religious leaders, politicians, all sorts of influencers you don't like. When you step beyond this perspective, you can see that in the world there's a tremendous amount of suffering and pain and conflict. There's lots of beauty and love too. But you're looking at it, all of it together. It's like in a big bubble. And all these pieces, and a lot are in conflicts with each other, having wars, killing each other, hurting each other. By golly, that's the macro of you. It's not some external reality that you're only a little part of, insignificant part of. It's really the macro you. Your world is the macro you. In other words, what you can learn from all the unfinished business, from all the politics and the religious wars and whatever it is in the world, all those conflicts can teach you. And you can learn from them. But if you hold the correct resonance, if you hold the correct point of view, then not only you will feel whole, but you'll begin to see that every one of those players in the world are doing something that ultimately, whether it creates pain at this time or not, ultimately will create growth, expansion, and higher frequency. In other words, it's all working in harmony, although it's not in harmony with each other, it's working in harmony towards a common grand vision of wholeness. Just like you. When you get that, you begin to experience the oneness with all life, the oneness with your world, with nature, with all the animals, the plants, the people, the rocks, everything, all made of the same substance, all just there as part of the illusion, as far as part of a dance, of a play, with a plot that leads to wholeness, oneness. As much as it does not look like it, you know, if you have to look at the mythology of it, you've come back to be here now on the planet at this time, to be part of the movement towards wholeness, towards oneness, to wrap up your own lifetimes, to find wholeness and oneness within yourself as the micro you, and then as the macro you, the world, to give direction by your intention, by your reality creation magic, as the master now, to move the whole world towards harmony, towards wholeness. It seems to be a big job, but dear ones, it wasn't meant to be really a horrible, painful, suffering kind of thing. It was meant to be kind of fun. When you first came into physical plane, well, wow, this is fun. This is really amazing. It's kind of like going to a theme park and having a really fabulous ride. And you come off the ride, wow, that was fun. That's what you were expecting. And actually, it's what you're getting. But you just don't frame it as fun. But when you get yourself into wholeness, things become a lot more fun. You laugh more. You bond and connect more. You express better. Your life is more luminous. And that's part of your spiritual path. You're on the homeward path now. That's it. You're going home. You're returning. And you're going to say, wow, look at all what I experienced. Man, was that a blast. And in the process, I learned how to be God, Goddess, myself. I learned how to be all. I learned how to create my own world, my own universe. That's the trick. All right, so we're going to take a break.
10 minutes.
10 minute break. All right, and when we come back, we'll answer questions. All right. Farewell.